This week on The Droids, we're back to talk episode 2, chapter 18 of The Mandalorian, The Minds of Mandalore. Bathe in the waters, come bathe with us in the waters. All that and more on The Droids.
Did you hear that?
These are the droids you're looking for.
These are the greatest droids.
I'm the one.
There's always a bigger fish.
Hello there.
Rebellion's built on hope.
Welcome back to The Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Alongside Ryan, I am Mike. And Ryan, how often are you finding particular waters to bathe in? Do you have ceremonial waters? And
I'm
if
very
so,
particular.
What
I'm
creatures are in there?
I'm very particular about my bathing waters. Look at the splashy boys this morning.
There it is.
Bathing in the waters. It's a little, as Chris likes to say, a peek behind the sausage. This is a morning record. So I feel like, I don't know about you, I have more energy than when we record at night. Even that may be surprising to people since they find me so peppy. But I could tell that my voice is not there yet. You know, I have a little bit of that smoky thing going.
I spent a little bit of time rooting for a certain basketball team last night, and my voice is still waking up from that as well.
I did nothing last night, and I'm still there. So you're doing great.
Well, I think, you know, bathing in the sacred waters really is something you should do in the morning. That seems like the way to start your day.
This is the way. This is the way. I every morning I like to bathe in the waters and be redeemed.
It's the only way to actually function in our society is if you go and be redeemed on a daily basis.
Yeah, I keep a helmet on. I take off my cape.
You know, we don't need to go down a religious road, but apparently in episode 1 of season 3, that chunk of Mandalore that has some, you know, script on it from when Din Djarin is talking to the armorer is actually Exodus from the Bible. I don't know how I feel about that.
Like the book of?
Yeah. Like, wow. it's actual scripture that they translated into. That does
like they just changed the words to like Mandalore.
Yeah, I think they did. Just they're like, well, you know, the Mandalorians are going through the same things. So why don't we just?
That's wildly unimaginative.
I know, but I mean, it's clearly, you know, it's not like it's shouted out upon in the show. And someone who is maybe a prop maker was like, well, I need to find something to fill this in.
I guess
what makes sense.
Yeah. So the Sunday school kids could do the Leonardo DiCaprio meme.
Exactly. You know?
Are the words that are being said or not? It's just what's written down.
Yeah, what's written on the stone.
That's less unimaginative. Yeah. But like, you know, I guess it's like you don't have time to make up a language. Not everybody's Peter Jackson just laying around making up languages.
Well, but the thing about it, you got Pedro Pascal in an episode of The Last of Us in the same week where they're talking about Exodus in a very different way that actually was very apparent in the episode.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway,
big
that's
Exodus,
probably
big Exodus head. I guess he is.
I guess this is, you know, this is our religious corner from the
moment.
He's
like Seinfeld with Superman. You know how Seinfeld would get Superman in there?
Because he's got
like
so
that
much
Exodus.
Influence on the writing of the episode.
With the book of Exodus, I was about to. I don't know where that falls in the Bible. Is that the last book? No, that's.
Don't ask me. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well,
neither do I.
Ryan, you
write
were not.
In. Hey, write in. droidspod@gmail.com.
I'm sure there's a listener.
Where in the arc of the Bible does Exodus fall?
Ryan, tell us your thoughts on episode 1, The Apostate, of chapter 3, chapter 17 of The Mandalorian. It was a shorter episode. We didn't get your thoughts last week with Chris. So let us know. What did you think of that first kickoff to the new season?
Hey, I enjoyed it very much. I thought it was, I'm sure you, and this brought up, it's weird that they, in the previously on, they didn't bring up the resolved story arc
that was brought up
in a different show.
I've listened to a few other podcasts about The Mandalorian, and I cannot believe there are not more people flabbergasted by that. That it's just completely ignored. It is one of the craziest things that I feel like they've done, that they're not even hinting at it. And
it,
who,
yeah,
who's
it
out
not being
there?
It not being like just established in the previously on is truly baffling. Because this show is so popular that people who like don't follow Star Wars, like, you know, obviously for us it's common knowledge.
People who only follow the
Book of Boba Fett.
There are so many people who were brought in just by Baby Yoda. There were people who loved Baby Yoda on social media and started watching the show just to see the cute moments of Grogu. And they didn't know at all. And maybe they don't care because they just want to see what it looks like. But still.
I thought it was wild. But other than that, you know, as someone who did know what happened, I thought it was a very enjoyable episode. I thought the scene at the beginning with the giant alligator crocodile, yeah. I don't know, you know, which part of the world they were in. So, was very exciting. It was a little redundant, I do have to say, at a certain point. It felt like it was going on for a long time. That episode and this episode, pretty effects heavy, and the effects look really good, which means that we're probably going to get an episode in the season where they're, like, locked in a freezer or something.
But, the bottle episode's on the way.
Yeah, they just need to redistribute the budget a little bit. But I thought it was good. I thought it was a great, you know, it was very, it was, I think it was only 30 minutes or whatever, and I thought it was a good, intriguing way to start the season, and it gave us, you know, the mission,
yeah,
the quest, if you will. And I always think it's interesting, this show has done this a few times, where you think the quest is going to be the season-long arc, and then they just kind of do it, which I actually respect.
Yep.
Like, I actually prefer that, as opposed to it being this, like, long, drawn-out thing. If anything, I think with The Mandalorian really benefits from above a lot of other television shows is that it allows its stories to be as short as they need to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that sounds like a backhanded compliment, and I don't mean it. I mean it as a real compliment, where it's kind of coming from this idea of, like, hey, like, sometimes 22 minutes is a whole episode of television.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, we don't need to do this thing where, you know, it's 10-hour-long episodes, or, you know, in the case of, you know, Obi-Wan, 6-hour-long episodes that could have been crammed into 2 half-hour episodes.
Mm. I know we're not into episode 2 yet, but I could argue that the 44-minute runtime of episode 2 should have been 35 minutes or 37
minutes. Right, because you brought this offline. There's a lot of extraneous walking.
Yeah, you know, I just... Look, I understand. The Mandalorians look great when they're walking. The sets are cool. Let's show it. But we're walking through the same place 4 different times?
That was the funniest thing. That is true. And, like, so I understand that I'm going back on what I just said. It did dawn on me that it is funny because there's a lot of fetching people.
Yeah.
That they literally did the same journey, like you said, 4 times. Like, back, forth. And I was like, we're seeing the same corridor. We could have skipped it. We could have had... She arrives at the lair or the
or Grogu gets back to the ship faster. Though it gave me a nice moment of they can fly now when it was like an alligator from the, you know, depths of Mandalore who had wings.
Yeah, I liked all the creature stuff. I really liked. I loved that. Did you get an idea that you were like, this guy is small? This is a small guy.
Which guy?
The dude who traps Mandalorian.
Oh, yeah. That he's a small,
and he keeps kind of getting progressively smaller.
Yeah.
And I thought there was going to be... At first, they did this big reveal, and it seemed like it was going to be kind of like the Men in Black thing, where he was going to be this tiny little pilot dude.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it would be... I guess spoiler alert for Men in Black. But they didn't do it the first time. It kind of... The head thing came off, and then he went into...
Mm-hmm.
The
giant spider.
But then at the end, they kind of established that he was a tiny little dude, which I thought was great character design.
I thought it was
really fun, the magnifying glass eye. I thought, like, for a tiny bit, I thought, is this going to be a Grievous-like character?
Yeah.
But again, I'm glad that they didn't feel the need to tie everything into something. It was just a fun character design for the sake of it.
Especially for those moments, given that the rest of this series is going to seem to be very tied into the rest of Clone Wars and Rebels and, you know, what we've seen with Mandalore, because it seems like they're going to lean heavily into just Mandalorian lore for the rest of this season. And I think Bo-Katan is just going to become even more a bigger part of the show when she made this effort to come and, you know, obviously rescue Din. But I agree with you. It was nice that having these, I'm conflicted is what I'll say, Ryan. Yeah. These moments where it's the action sequences that are not tied to anything else, with creatures that aren't tied to anything else, it's like, great, this is exciting. I have to say the biggest jump scare I've had in Star Wars was when Din was looking at the helmet and then the spider creature captured him. That really surprised me. And
that
was kudos. Great. That was very well done. But I think what I was missing, and this is also just from watching, you know, a lot of other stories recently where it feels like there are not wasted moments. And all of these action beats, they don't serve up into anything. We're not learning anything new about the characters. They're not gaining any skills. They're not, you know, developing some sort of relationship. It's just sort of there to have, and like you said at the beginning, the alligator in episode 1. We're just there to have some action. And you know what? I should just kind of accept that and be fine with it. But at times I find myself bored. Obviously not when they had the jump scare. That got me. But I think when it was the second time that they were fighting, or Grogu had to fight against one of the gray monsters with three green eyes or four green eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, I, you know, this just doesn't matter. I get it. They're meant to be part of the world. And we learn from Bo-Katan that they were the Outworlders on Mandalore, and they found their way back, and they've taken over. But I don't know that I care that much until they start to like really show what this means. And because we know none of our characters are in peril, we know that they are not going to die with these tiny little skirmishes.
To me, that's the thing, is that the action scenes in anything generally are most effective when well integrated into the narrative. And whether that can sometimes be kind of a magic trick where it's not actually true. You know what I mean? Like, because you could take an action, but whatever. The thing of it is that, like you said, when they walk in and I call them like radiation monsters. I don't know if that's true, but the things attack them. It literally is just like an exercise in action. There's nothing to it. They're only there to be dispatched.
Yep.
Right. And they establish that there are monsters in the cave, but it doesn't really add any suspense because he dispatches them so easily. He shoots four guys and then it's over. Where the him being caught by the crab monster robot man, whatever we'll call him, that is like, it feels integrated into the story because it's an obstacle in order to stop him from achieving his goal.
Yeah.
You know, so to me, I'm like, okay, like that makes sense. You know, we didn't need to do it in the grand scheme of things. But this is why stories exist. He could just walk into the mines and get into the waters, but it would be boring.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So he's presented with obstacles. However, by the time Bo-Katan is fighting those guys, which is narratively interesting because it establishes that Grogu doesn't know that other Mandalorians kind of exist
in its own way. Yeah, because they have that line of dialogue where she says, "Did you think your dad was the only Mandalorian?"
Right, but that part is diluted a lot because we've already seen them fight these things like three times.
Yeah.
So yeah, I agree. If the first time that we see Din in peril is when that thing's, like you said, that jump scare happens, I think that's more effective than having him already fight those things, then be caught by the crab monster, then have Grogu go be attacked by those things, then have Bo-Katan come back and be attacked by those things. It's just a lot.
Yeah, which is why I said there's probably at least 5 minutes that you could cut out there. I mean, maybe I'm overestimated because I feel like when you're watching them walk through, it feels like forever and it's probably only like 6 seconds. But, you know, there's definitely something they could cut out there. But I think you hit on something that has maybe stood out to me, and I can't help it. We're going to compare to Andor.
Right,
so much of the building of the tension in Andor is just ever present, you know, especially during the prison sequence. So to watch something that is sort of trying to build tension without any real tension, even though I felt that more once he was captured, but in those other action sequences, it's just difficult because I'm like, you're trying to do something that something else did way better.
And I also understand that this is a different kind of show where it's a little more cartoony. They don't want the peril to be super perilous, you know, in that way.
Yeah.
But I think so. When Grogu's racing back in his little pod, I thought that was effective. However, you don't even need all of it. You just need to establish that they establish when they go in that there are like little creatures in the dark that look menacing. Mm-hmm. And having him go through on his own is kind of tense enough.
Yeah.
So it dispels the tension by having him fight them. I understand they have to show that he could use the Force and things like that, but we've seen that at this point. You know, we've seen enough of him kind of like clenching his little adorable ravioli hand and, you know, throwing something. We know he can. Speaking of him, and I understand this is a little unrelated, but I'd have to do a side by side. I think they're doing subtle things to age him up a little. Like, I know that sounds funny, but like, I feel like his ears are a little bigger and his face looks a little different. He's definitely more vocal.
I think I agree with you. I thought I saw more hair on the top of his little tiny head. Like,
which I think is cool. I think that's a cool, subtle thing for them to do, especially the way they're showing his development literally verbally.
Yep.
How they're saying, like, it's not just that, like Amy Sedaris' character saying, I think he said his first word. It's that he's starting to do the way human babies often do, is that it's not really words yet, but they're just more vocal. He's making sounds.
Mm-hmm.
He's indicating things vocally. And I think that's a cool thing for the development of his character.
It is very cool. I think they're going to play it slow in the sense that I don't know that they're ready for what the reaction would be to introduce Grogu's real voice.
Oh, yeah.
And if to have him as a talking character. And I didn't think you were implying that.
That
I just
is their Sam and Diane. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Speaking of which, I'm rewatching, actually for the first time through watching Cheers right now. So don't tell me, do they get together?
No spoilers for Cheers.
Back to the beginning of this episode, Ryan. Yeah. How thrilled were you to see a nice skyline shot of the classic Tatooine to start an episode of Star Wars?
So glad to be there. I love Amy Sedaris, so it's always fun. And I was glad that our legacy character was just like R5-D4.
Yeah.
That's fine. I could deal with that. Yeah. And like, they gave him so much personality. And you know what? After all these years, he's earned it.
You know, this is the first time he's done anything, because he was sort of just once again introduced to be like, let's have the decorations on the wall still remind you of the original Star Wars. And so let's have something in the background and introduce R5 and be like, this is the character. But you don't see him really doing anything up until this. And he gets a nice oil bath, and the stain from where his motivator broke in the original trilogy in A New Hope has been removed, which was, I thought, I was like, wow. They could have, for all this time, it's been 30 years, he's never had an oil bath to be able to remove that stain.
Okay. He also becomes... Now, this I thought was savvy storytelling. He becomes integrated into the story in a really effective way.
Yeah.
Because it's such an organic thing when they're flying down to Mandalore for Din to be like, this is how the map works. And like, this is where Bo-Katan was. And it felt like such a good gun on the mantelpiece thing when Grogu gets back in the cockpit and he points at the star on the, or the planet on the map. And also they did this twice too, which is so funny that we were just talking about that. I didn't even think how much this happens. The breaking through the clouds on the Mandalore was a great moment.
Yeah,
it was. When they're flying down, they do it twice.
I like that they did it twice because it was so much more obviously put together with the special effects. But I don't know if you noticed when they were kind of looking down at Mandalore, I was like, are the stars even moving behind them? It's a single static shot with nothing moving around them. And I'm like, I'm sorry, but I think I can tell that you're sitting on a set when nothing moves.
Yeah, that's so funny. But Tatooine, you know, we got to go back to Tatooine. I'm glad they gave it fireworks and a little, you know, it was a, what was it, Ponto Eve?
Boonta Eve. Which isn't that right when the pod race was?
I think so. It seemed to be that they were doing what I would think of, you know, because the establishing shot has kind of like speeders going through the town. Mm-hmm. It seems like it'd be like, oh, we do like the mini pod race through the town. Yeah.
The, or whatever, the non-professionals are out on the streets.
Right, which is really fun. I thought that was a good way to do it. It is the place that the volume is so evident.
Yeah.
For some reason, that's where it reads the most. I don't know if on Mandalore, if they built more sets or if the sets were smaller, if it was just more effectively done. But on Tatooine, it's starting, the volume is starting to look like the volume, the way green screen looks like green screen.
Yeah. I do think it looked better though than the Book of Boba Fett when they were in the same hangar, because I do think when they were building the N1 Starfighter, there's a background where you can see, you know, the pit droids.
Yeah.
And it looks sort of just all flat, even though you know, the volume, it just looks sort of flat and almost like there's almost noise on it, even though there isn't. And it looked so bad that this looked a bit better. And I stand by that. I do think that the volume has gotten better each season.
Yeah, and also it's a tool. They're developing it. You know, Star Wars is generally at the forefront of these things, for better or worse. You know, so they're developing it, and it's fine.
Did you think that we were going to spend an extended period of time on I mean, because this episode is called The Minds of Mandalore. So I guess when we got that chapter title, we knew that this is not going to be an extended Tatooine. Yeah. I think one of the things you talked about, the motivation for what Din has to do. So his MacGuffin for this season, it felt like, wow, he's got to go and get all the things he needs to go and explore Mandalore. Nope, we're there. Like you said, we just jumped ahead and we're here.
Right. And granted, we didn't end it. It didn't end on like success, you know, like, I mean, he did it, but whatever. But
yeah.
I feared we were going to spend a lot of time on Tatooine, but we didn't.
Do you think that they've, I mean, I guess there are still rumors that Book of Boba Fett could be coming back. For a second, I was worried. I'm like, are we going to get some, you know, time with Boba and with Shenik Fran and Fennec? I said Shenik Fran. Fennec. I just didn't want to see anymore. Like, hey, how are things? How's your Rathdar doing around here?
Yeah. You know what I do? You know, if they ever make a episode 10, right? Or, you know, or just something happening after the
Announcing April 7th at Star Wars Celebration?
Yeah, maybe. If they do anything after the sequel trilogy, what I would do is introduce a fourth Death Star at this point. You know, if we're counting Starkiller Base, and first order of business, or no, I'd put it in the scroll. I wouldn't even do it. Tatooine has been destroyed.
All right, I think that's the only way to allow it.
I think we just need to be done with it.
Well, but then they would just say, oh, we've got all this set up. We'll just shoot on Jakku now. So it can still look
right,
like Tatooine.
Right, and that's fine, because then at least we're getting like the ship graveyard and stuff. You know, we got small baby steps, I suppose.
Well, R5 obviously gets the more starring role. We see him when they first get to Mandalore. But do you think we're now done with the IG-11 possibilities? Like, I hope that means that now he's found another droid that he likes and can actually
service. Was that the only reason he needed him?
Yeah. He just needed him to be able to check the atmosphere, and he was the only droid that he trusted, and that's why that he was in Chapter 17.
Well, that seems like Episode 1 was a lot of waste.
Well, yes.
You know, just in the grand scheme of things, it was compelling, and we got to see the little Babu Frick guys, but...
They could be bringing him back in a different way, a different capacity. It's like, oh, hey, welcome back. They found an IG-11 memory chip while you were gone.
If they literally drop that arc by Amy Sedaris just like mechanicking him into just using the R5,
yeah,
that's wild. I also, he said he needed it for spelunking, and
I
thought it was interesting. I guess the IG-11, they're built so functionally. I was like, I'm not sure if I would take that for a spelunking droid, but turns out not. Did you think it was funny in the first episode where she called it the Civic Center?
Wait, which when
she said it's under the Civic Center in Mandalore,
I
understand a Civic Center is just where like courts and stuff are.
Yeah, that was weird.
It was just strangely colloquial to our like vernacular.
Yeah, because especially when they have such an opportunity to share these specific places on Mandalore that we've seen before, like they could have said something more specific. Like, remember, where's that bombing? Was that bombing in that episode where they were trying, the Death's Watch was trying to make it seem like things were not safe under Sabine, and or not Sabine, Satine, right? I'm forgetting.
Yeah, Lady Satine. I honestly don't remember. It's been so long. But like,
someone's going to email us and say that was the Civic Center. That's why they referenced it.
Well, no, I don't take issue with it being the Civic Center. I think that's interesting. This is like, oh, like this is where.
No, but yeah, the phrase.
But that they call it that is so funny to me.
Yeah, well, there's that times and even when I think. Amy Sedaris says something along the lines of like, oh, it'll take us 2 months. And at times, 2 months? Shouldn't they say something different? Like, you know, just
two cycles. You know what I mean? Like, it's like if someone said it's over by the, I don't know, like, I can't even think
convenience
of
store.
The bike path, you know, or something like that. Like, I'd be I suppose they do have bikes, but.
R5 has never looked better. And he then disappears and has to be rescued by Din. And they make their way back. And I think that apprehension, as you said, is nice with R5. I like that he's got this place in it. I wouldn't mind if they're moving on from IG-11, but as you said, in retrospect, it would make that episode very weird. But yeah. I think I mentioned in our last episode that it felt like, look, that story was great. I felt more emotion for a droid probably until we saw B2 and Andor than I had in any other droid when he had that finale where he sacrificed himself.
Right.
Why undercut that? Why bring that back? That's why I was excited to see that R5 had maybe taken on the role that he wanted. And it's like, okay, good. Maybe we can move on from this. So, yes, it would be disappointing in retrospect to say none of that mattered. But I think from the trailer, we've seen that Din does go back to Navarro with R5 in tow. Because that's what I'd seen it in the trailer. I was like, hey, why is R5 in the background? And there's now a reason. He clearly has become a part of this. And
yeah, he's
Din's
now
their
astromech droid.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, it's getting crammed in there, I'll tell you what.
They do not have any space in that N5. I mean, it's better cuddles. Look, let's be honest.
That's true, that's true. I also, shout out to whoever's doing the animation /puppetry on R5. When he lowers his third wheel
Yeah.
There's like a close-up of him lowering his third wheel on Mandalore to like go check the atmosphere.
Yeah.
It literally reads as nervous.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very funny. And I couldn't, it's not like they do like a really over the top, like, ooh, like shaking thing. It's just the timing of it. Everything is so perfect that it really reads as he's apprehensive. And I thought that, you know, as always with those, with astromech droids, they have some of the most personality in the universe.
It's so interesting just to think about, again, all the performers, all the people who work on this show, when we criticize maybe some of the writing or we criticize some of the decision making, there's still all these people who are at the top of their form, you know, right, top class in what they do and can create things. And even for people who didn't like aspects of The Last Jedi, you know, the Canto Bight scene with all the droids in the Canto Bight casino, you know, the amount of training. I remember Anthony Daniels talking about how he trained, what, 6 to 8 different actors to be able to portray these droids. And yeah, a lot of people put a lot of time and care into it. And I love when you see those kind of things. I'm glad you pointed that out, because it's such a cool thing to think about someone taking the time to make sure that they were really evoking the emotions of this droid in a subtle way. It was beautiful.
Yeah, it was great.
So one of the things I really loved about this, and it's just a pure, you know, when you do it well and you do it well with the effects, is the descent into Mandalore.
Yeah.
Both of them, just like his step off. The way that when the Mandalorian and Din just steps off the side of a ledge and lets his pack carry him down, that was awesome. I could sit and watch a Mandalorian slowly glide downward, or, you know, just explore in a way like that. Because in the way they did it, and obviously because of the probably the shot they had, it's not like they needed to have somebody hanging from a string. So you didn't get that weird, like, sort of
where they feel Peter like they're Pan being legs. Like cinched a little bit.
Yeah. So it just felt like it looked great. I loved watching it, and I loved how we continue to go deeper and deeper into the origins. And I loved when Bo-Katan did it as well. It just was fun to see that. As much as we, you know, I was complaining about multiple times in the same scene, it's when you got out of the walking and you got into this more, you know, movement and display that I'm like, this is cool. This is, I can sit and watch somebody do this 2 or 3 times.
Yeah, another great little detail, since that's kind of like what we're getting into at this point, is I love that when he turned on the darksaber that it was heavy.
Yeah, but and, keeping that going. And then the difference for Bo, and like, for listen, Bo-Katan, we know, she's like, she can handle it.
We know that, you know, Filoni's very involved in, like, he is a believer. Like, he, like, what George says is, like, his thing. And George used to say before the prequels, where he kind of threw this out, but that everybody fought with two hands with the lightsabers because lightsabers are supposed to be heavy like Excalibur.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, Filoni was like, that's the law. This is the way. And, you know, he turns on the darksaber and Din clearly is surprised at how heavy it is.
You remind me, there are some different clips going around of shots of Filoni's face during the press tour with Favreau, where Favreau is saying something that is not accurate or not the way it's supposed to be. And not saying like he's inaccurate for what we know Star Wars to be.
Right,
in the example, he had said, well, you know, we know that Din doesn't have any access to the Force. And Filoni gives a look like, do we?
I mean, yeah. That's
like,
so funny.
It's just like, it's like, let's hang on here.
That's very, you
know,
funny.
Especially knowing the stories. But I love that. And I love, again, the counter. I guess, Ryan, my thought, what do you think of where we're at with Bo-Katan? And what did you think about Bo-Katan from episode 1 to this episode? What do you think her motivations are? It felt a little odd that she jumped at I'll rescue him when she had such indifference to him a moment ago. And when she, at the beginning in this episode, she says, okay, I'm gonna get rid of him once and for all, but then she finds out he's in danger and she jumps at it to go help him.
Yeah, I think that that didn't read that odd to me, because I didn't think that she had intentions to actually like harm him. I thought it was gonna be like one of those like, get out of here, you dumb dog. Or, like, not that. Like, more of a, like, I think she's holding a weapon, and I think she's, like, one of those things where, like, she shoots at his feet, and she's like, I'll aim to kill you if I see you here again, like, with that kind of thing. I really like that character. I think she's incredibly interesting across the entire, like, all of the canon. And I think that she obviously has that kind of stoic demeanor where, and they're like building to like, but she really does care underneath kind of thing. But I also think that she's self-interested enough that Din was going to check out Mandalore because she was like, I don't think it's cursed. I think it's probably breathable, but like, you go and you let me know.
Yeah.
that kind of thing. So I think the thing of he's on Mandalore and she, you know, she asks where he is. Assumedly, she finds out he's on Mandalore. So she's like, great. So that problem solved. I know that we can go there now.
Yeah.
So that's part of her plan. The other thing is that I think she's kind of keeping an eye on him because she wants the Darksaber.
Well, that's why I'm saying, like, she knows she has to defeat him in combat.
Yeah.
To win the Darksaber. So I thought after episode one that this is her play. You know, she's showing she's disinterested and she actually obviously still cares deeply. And so thinking that there would be an opportunity for her to take it. In this, we see that she can pick up the Darksaber because, you know, it's there after he's been captured, but she still doesn't own or have the right to the Darksaber because she didn't defeat him. So even though she can possess it, she's not the rightful leader of Mandalore until she were to defeat him. So it's almost like, are we going to get some buddy-buddy between them for a little while before there's just a point where there's no way that she cannot break and try to get what is going to give her rightful leadership in her mind of the planet? So I'm still a little confused about it, but
that's intriguing.
So that's all intriguing. But again, her like immediate rescue, go help him. And then as you said, she knows that he's there, so she knows that she can breathe the air. Well, actually, if he's in trouble, maybe she doesn't know. And there should have been another moment of, we don't have to see that scene where R5 says in the cockpit or something, hey, we don't.
Yeah, but if you think about it, like then we're seeing another scene where she's like, test the air.
Yeah, exactly.
She's going out with her helmet on. It's like, I guess we're supposed to assume that R5 kind of on the little reader kind of updated on what was going on.
Yeah, I think you're right. And then it's nice to see her Mandalorian ship after we've seen it so much in Clone Wars, have that bring to life.
Yeah.
And there's not a whole lot else. You know, this is just an action-heavy episode, an exploration-heavy episode, until we get to the real place of interest of bathing in the mines below Mandalore. Yeah. And, you know, it was set up as overtly as it possibly could, because isn't it the beginning of this season or even where it's talked about, oh, the Mythosaur is supposed to represent the return of Mandalore or a new era of Mandalore. So it felt like once he was in the water and once they kind of took some time, it's like, oh, what could be in that water? So that's got to be, I like that there's so much that we have talked about that, oh, are they just giving us case of the week, moment of the week? And here it is. This is an interesting aspect of it that is wholly focused in this show, and it alludes to the entire history of Mandalore, but it felt like there's meat on this bone right here. What I felt like there's something here, and that was unique enough in this episode, and the ramifications of that are going to be unique as well, because what is Bo-Katan going to take away from that? She's not part of the Children of the Watch. Does she read into this mythology and believe in the signs the same way? She probably does, being that the Mythosaur is the symbol of the Mandalorian race. I would think that's going to have some big changes for us. But I it's funny. I keep on feeling like I want it both ways a lot of the time. I want it to be the show that is just fun each week, and then I want it to have more stakes, but then I don't want it to be tied completely to everything else that happened. But this felt like earned in this story, in this world, building on what's happened before, without you needing to know everything that happened before and having needed to watch all of Clone Wars to get it.
I'm just glad that they didn't have to fight that thing.
It's always like a bigger fish. Like,
again, you know? But
Yeah. Well, that would have been odd, too. It would be also, like, well, this representation of their creed is just trying to kill them.
Of course. Just a note to any kids out there wading into waters. Look down. You got to check. You got to check out.
Especially with you got a lamp on the head of the helmet there.
Yeah, there was no excuse for what happened there. I'm putting that on him.
I was just kind of curious. You think it's just like, well, he took a step and his Mandalorian Beskar is so weighted that he's just gone.
I think what happened.
He wasn't pulled by the Mythosaur.
So at first I thought, oh, something pulled him down. I do not think he was pulled. I think he literally just stepped off because otherwise, when she goes in, she goes down a few steps and then there's literally like a cliff. And it's not like a cliff where the sand is still settling. It's like, oh, it just collapsed.
Yeah.
So they almost went out of their way to show that he just like stepped off. Otherwise, it would have been like, oh, there was like a tentacle or like whatever. I understand the Mythosaur doesn't have tentacles, but
Ryan, they have now shown us twice a little bit of ineptitude from Mandalorian in the last two episodes. You know, we've heard so much about them as warriors. And well, now you add to it with what happened in Return of the Jedi. It's like, are they actually that good? They can't defeat. There's 25 of them and they can't take down a crocodile monster. You know, they're walking off of ledges. They're getting bumped by sticks and dying in Sarlacc pits and then coming back to life.
You're going
to
be getting some emails, my man.
I think they're maybe thinking a little bit. They're taking a little of the mystique out of these Mandalorians.
You're gonna get, they're humanizing them, Mike. You're going to be getting some emails from some angry Mandalorians.
Mando mercs are coming for me.
My God.
Well, yeah. I thought that was cool. I love that the dive that she makes to go down and get him, him back. It all looked beautiful. It all was just like, okay, this is just so spectacular. How did you feel about the darkness of this entire episode? Were you well shrouded in your home versus
was no Game of Thrones thing happening. I could see. I thought it was adequately moody, but not without. Listen, you need enough light to pull focus, everybody. Just remember that. I thought it was okay. I do. I watched them early in the morning, so it wasn't super bright. I don't know if I would have had an issue otherwise.
Yeah.
Flares on TVs bother me.
Yeah. Yeah. I recently watched Best Picture Front Runner, Everything Everywhere All at Once. I've seen it with you, Ryan, but I watched it again with my parents, where they had absolutely no shade whatsoever, and it was all glare on the TV the entire time. And they're like, yeah, we thought the performances were good. We don't know if they were actually, like, Oscar-worthy. I'm like, you couldn't see their faces. Couldn't see anything.
I could see how, and this has nothing to do with your parents in particular, I could see how that movie with the brightest screen could be confusing for people not, you know, well versed in the genres that it's playing with.
I paused it many times to tell
that them being said on. I want to say I adore that movie and I think that it makes it accessible to everybody. I was just thinking if my parents saw that, I think they'd be confused even if there wasn't a glare on the TV.
Oh, they were, and you know, they're in their 70s, so we had a lot of conversations about what was happening, but they enjoyed it in the end. But
this isn't the Everything Everywhere All at Once cast, but what a phenomenal creative achievement that movie is.
I've seen it four times now, so I will go back again and again
it's
and again.
Great.
But
it's so great.
Seeing it with you and Sam from the pod and having a chance to watch it with a crowd, you know, even though that's just a crowd of three. But
we're rowdy.
It makes the experience all the better.
Yeah.
But I am a stickler for experience when viewing. And I honestly feel like sometimes you should have to like show your watching experience before you can talk about a movie. Did you watch it with your phone in hand? Did you watch it or an episode of TV? And I think it's actually one of the things I found on one of my recent podcasts is that I'm a little disappointed by some of the hosts who've told me, they're like, oh, yeah, I was checking ESPN the entire time. And I'm like, wait a second. This is not how you should be watching a show. Even if you don't feel like it is your favorite show, if you're trying to tell me your perspective on it and you can't remember if the character is a father or a brother, and I'm talking about Last of Us in that episode with the brothers that ended as it did, I lose a little bit of respect. Like, how can you criticize something? How can you give a perspective on it if you're not actually setting aside your time and watching it in the best conditions? Because you are then not giving your mind to it, and then you may also not be experiencing it the way that the artist intended. So it certainly has changed my perspective a bit on certain podcast hosts who will remain nameless.
Right. Mike, I know you're being diplomatic. We all have problems with The Ringer sometimes. This, I will say, I watched The Mandalorian laptop and phone free. That is my appointment television.
Yeah, same.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's plenty of shows. I'll watch a lot of things with my phone, but not when it's The Last of Us, not when it's
The Mandalorian. I'd say there's two shows a week right now that I watch sans like any second screen,
which is
the same. It's The Last of Us and The Mandalorian.
I'll add a third, and it's Poker Face for me. That one I'll also.
Oh, right. Yeah. That has become more of like a dinner show for us. Like, we kind of watch it while things are on. I wouldn't write a review of it having done that.
Exactly. You wouldn't treat it like your job having done it that way.
Those are the two that I do right now. And The Last of Us is like a lot of me being like, this is great, and then throwing out like a single minute criticism and everybody getting very angry about it.
Oh no.
Just the tiniest, like being like, that was a fantastic episode of television. The only thing that bothered me, and then everybody gets mad.
Mm-hmm. Well, everybody's holding it close to the vest and having a lot of appreciation for it, which
very good. It's a very good show. And someone listening right now is furious that I'm not saying it's an incredible, amazing, astounding show. I think it's extremely good.
All right, we're going to save it for the Last of Us pod that we start sometime soon.
Yeah.
Anything else about this episode? I think it was interesting to me that it felt like the ruins of Mandalore, given that we know this place from the Clone Wars, I thought we might see a little bit more something in the ruins that was recognizable for us.
He landed on that bridge, and I was like, maybe that's the bridge, you know?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was like, is this that bridge? Is this, and that's probably,
I'm not sure anything would look recognizable in this state to me.
Yeah, fair.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like, only because architecturally speaking, I imagine a lot of it was kind of in line with each other. So yeah. I could think, oh, that giant broken window behind him is the one that broke while Ahsoka was talking to Darth Maul, but I wouldn't know.
Yeah,
I imagine that they were in the Civic Center.
They must have been.
That must be where the throne room is.
That's how they found their way. Well, and then also, though, I think the only other thing we found is, Ryan, would you like some Mandalorian soup?
What do they call it? Pog soup?
Yeah, something like that.
I think it's called Pog soup, which to me, I'm thinking...
90s Pogs?
You're throwing little cardboard circles in the soup?
That's got a flavor to it.
Where are you chewing on the slammer?
Didn't a lot of Pogs come in cereal? I'm sure they've got some, you know,
that's
sugar.
Oh, my God. Sometimes, yeah, they made the Pogs the back of the cereal box sometimes. You could, like, punch them out. Yeah. People who were born after 1996 have no idea what we're talking
about
right now.
This is endless,
and you could do your own research on this. But there was a time where the thing that caught the youth of America's imagination the most was pieces of cardboard circles with things printed on them. But, like, this isn't a joke. This isn't, like, a bit. It was cardboard circles about an inch and a half in diameter with like an 8-ball printed on it.
Yeah, well, Ryan, right now the world's kind of really caught up in pictures of things that are digital NFTs, you know?
That's true.
Just give me
an
8-ball, call it a pog, I'll buy it.
And I'm not talking about like an 8-ball of like drugs.
Give me an 8-ball, Ryan.
I'm talking about, and the coolest ones were little metal ones that were kind of shaped like buzz saws.
I loved it.
That would have like a holographic 8-ball on it.
Any other thoughts?
We carried around in giant cylinders. This isn't a joke. Giant cylinders. We'd bring them to school. There was a kid once I knew, he had a cylinder that was taller than him, filled with pogs. How do you find one in there? You have to pour them all out.
Yeah, and then you get to show everybody every single one while you look for the one that you wanted.
Yeah. So the soup was fine. I think they should have it at Galaxy's Edge. Some pog soup.
Oh, please.
You drink bone broth. You drink bone broth out of a cup like people were doing 2 years ago in the East Village. More than 2 years ago. We're in the middle of a pandemic. Hold on. Let me try that again. 6 years ago in the East Village.
Ryan, anything else we want to talk about this episode? I think we covered pretty much everything.
I think it was really fun. I look forward to see where the season's going. And And you know what? You know what, Andy Greenwald?
That actually isn't who I was talking about.
No, I know. That was like a real joke. I mean, he will never know about this, and that was a joke. I like his conversations.
I do want to ask what your thoughts are on, you know, your feelings in watching this after watching Andor, and we're not going to get into it being point by point comparison. I just haven't heard your thoughts in like how you feel in watching this.
I'm gonna give like a really boring answer.
All right.
But it like apples and oranges. That's I don't expect them to be doing the same thing, and so I don't even criticize them on like the same level.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish that I had a more, you know, elaborate answer than that. Other than that, Andor rarely crosses my mind when watching this show.
Yeah, it really is. It feels like it's a different galaxy.
Yeah, yeah. It'd kind of be like to me, it's like if someone was like, which movie did you like more, Triangle of Sadness or Thor 2? You know, and I'd be like,
I mean, the Dark World has a lot of great things about it.
Yeah, I guess that was a bad example because like that's not a good movie.
Yeah,
but
not
like
a good movie. Yeah,
but like Triangle of Sadness or Thor 3. You know, whatever.
Something again, different genre entirely.
Yeah, I guess they're both comedy. I don't know. I can't come up with a good... I apparently can't come up with a good analogy, but...
Well, I think that's the right approach, and I'm...
Yeah.
Each episode, I've honestly kind of gone in with as much of an open mind as possible, and I think it's less about the direct comparisons to Andor and more about wanting some better storytelling and storytelling that has the pieces, like we said, that play a little bit more into each other. But I don't think it's... It's more that I'm surprised that I get lost in it for a moment and that I can see the seams a bit more.
Right.
That's something that didn't used to happen. And I think it's my own mentality that I probably just need to change a little bit because
I'll say this. I think that Andor succeeded far more at what Andor was trying to do than the Mandalorian succeeds at what the Mandalorian is trying to do.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that I think the Mandalorian is bad. I certainly don't. I like it very much. It's just that if that's kind of how I think criticism should work is that, you know, you're meeting it where it is that Andor was fully successful at what Andor was setting out to do. Mm-hmm. And I think that the Mandalorian falters sometimes.
Well, and I think that a point that's been made actually by Andy Greenwald in a previous podcast that I listened to was that this show kind of set itself up as this story of Lone Wolf and Cub. This is just going to be the Mandalorian. We're going to learn about him. It's separate from everything else. And then when it's tied into everything else, it makes me feel a little bit differently about it. Like, as much as I said, I enjoyed seeing more of the Mandalorian lore and see what they're building here for the Mandalorians for the rest of the season. The show that was promised, the show that was started was, you know, this mission for the Mandalorian with his little, you know, Yoda in tow. Right. And we're getting so far away from that you're right. It's not executing the Mandalorian as well as Andor executed what it wanted to be.
Right. And when it is tying it, it's like if Michael Corleone showed up in Iron Man 3, you'd be like, this makes me confused at what we're doing now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was at least a great time to talk about Mandalorian. I'm having fun every time we get a new episode because and look, we had a hero shot of R5. R5 was lit beautifully in this sunset on Mandalore. He's really back into the forefront where, you know, he always deserved to be. He was so close to glory and he didn't have that chance. And now here he is.
Good for him. We salute you, R5.
That will do it for the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. We'll be back next week. Well, Ryan, I have to ask, can you take the lead next week? I'm not going to be around. I'm not going to be able to be part of the pod next week. Are you able to run it without my presence?
There are big shoes to fill, but I will do my best.
I think it might be a better pod.
Welcome back to the Droids. Welcome back to the Droids. I'll do it. Yeah, I'll get there.
That's going to do it for the Droids. We'll catch you next week. You boys want to go to Mandalore and bathe in some waters?
Purify yourselves in the living waters.